periodista, eso es lo que pasa.
Los periodistas como trabajadores de la comunicación son un sector muy importante porque informan a la sociedad de la situación y eso es fundamental, pero al mismo tiempo ellos en sus condiciones laborales están sufriendo mucho. Ahora los matan, la situación es todavía peor.
Veladoras blancas se encendieron afuera de la dependencia, periodistas vestidos de negro, activistas con las fotografías de las víctimas y también ciudadanos con pancartas. Son las imágenes que se replican prácticamente en todas las ciudades en donde hubo este llamado a las protestas. En redes sociales se ocupó la etiqueta Ni Silencio Ni Olvido o Periodismo en Peligro para que de manera virtual haya un acompañamiento a este movimiento. Por cierto, afuera de Palacio Nacional por la mañana se montó también un altar para estos tres periodistas asesinados recientemente, mientras el presidente López Obrador daba su conferencia matutina. El mandatario dijo que se le acompañó en el litigio laboral a Lourdes Maldonado y que ya dio instrucciones para aclarar estos crímenes.
Estamos obligados a aclarar este crimen y a evitar que continúen los asesinatos de periodistas y de los ciudadanos, y por eso trabajamos todos los días. Y tenemos confianza porque somos diferentes, somos distintos, no somos iguales a los anteriores gobernantes.
Organizaciones internacionales como Artículo 19, Reporteros Sin Fronteras y la misma ONU han llamado a las autoridades estatales y federales a llevar a la justicia a los autores intelectuales y materiales de estos lamentables hechos. Mientras el caso de Lourdes Maldonado resuena fuerte a nivel internacional, las autoridades del estado de Baja California han designado un fiscal especial para esclarecer estos asesinatos en la ciudad de Tijuana, que por cierto se ubicó en el quinto lugar a nivel nacional de agresiones contra periodistas durante el primer semestre del 2021.
A continuación, nuestros colegas de Radio Temblor Internacional nos ofrecen un despacho de la serie Mujeres Panameñas en Defensa de la Naturaleza.
Históricamente, en nuestra región, la mayoría de la población se sostiene bajo una desigual distribución de la riqueza proveniente de un modelo de desarrollo inoperante, pero también víctima de la degradación ambiental por el extractivismo de bienes ecológicos que a su vez promueven efectos adversos al clima. ¿Cuál es el posicionamiento de las mujeres en territorio panameño? Clelia Mesúa Flaco, mujer indígena en Verá, expresa la lucha que conlleva a las mujeres por defender los bosques en la región de Darién.
Clelia.
Nosotras las mujeres organizadas estamos en un proceso de concienciación de mujeres, capacitándola para defender y proteger nuestro patrimonio comarcal contra los invasores devastadores de nuestra vida y del ambiente.
Los pueblos reiteran el respeto a su autodeterminación, a su vivencia autónoma junto a los bienes ecológicos y cultura ancestral, y ante la crisis planetaria promueven la economía ecológica popular y solidaria. Mujeres panameñas en defensa de la naturaleza, una serie radiofónica producida por Radio Temblor Internacional del colectivo Voces Ecológicas COBE, con el apoyo de la Red Júbilo Sur América.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Fuera del territorio nacional y en aquellas áreas de territorio nacional desde donde dichas armas también puedan alcanzar estos objetivos, ni capacitar al personal militar ni a civiles de países no poseedores de armas nucleares para el uso de este tipo de armamento. Son algunas de las exigencias, de las garantías. líneas de seguridad, así las cataloga el gobierno ruso, presentadas a Estados Unidos y cuya respuesta escrita entonces se ha producido esta jornada. Estamos a la espera de que el Ministerio de Asuntos Exteriores se pronuncie sus reacciones, pero ya en la jornada, en esta jornada, en la mañana de este miércoles, el ministro de Asuntos Exteriores ruso, Sergei Lavrov, se pronunció ante la Duma Estatal, la Cámara Baja del Parlamento ruso, para rendir cuentas sobre la política exterior del país, y allí obligatoriamente tuvo que también pronunciarse sobre muchos de esos asuntos. Defendió los derechos legítimos de Rusia de desplegar a su ejército en territorio nacional y catalogó de cínicas las aspiraciones de Occidente.
And rushing your way next, I guess it's the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. It's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Check the archives first, as my suggestion, at Lost and Latest Shows on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. But what do we got today? Well, a lot of stuff from the sort of Food Not Bombs in Motion, and some stuff from the Benchlands, which I haven't been to until recently, and that's going to really cover it all, plus the, ever-appreciated music of David Rovix, or at least I appreciate it, and I hope you do too.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with the much discussed and perhaps, oh no, endlessly tiresome oversized vehicle ordinance, the OVO, or OVO, as the latest bribe, drive them out of town, but look like you're helping them and dealing with a real problem when you're not, behavior by the Santa Cruz City Council. And there actually also was a council meeting on Tuesday, but there wasn't much to it. And in fact, the city manager's report that I usually recommend people listen to, simply because you get some indication of the facade, at least, and sometimes the strategies that the city is using to persuade the community that it is addressing homeless people while actually empowering the police department to remove them in traditional fashion with sweeps and more sweeps, really. But in that Tuesday meeting 2 days ago, there was actually no city manager's report that I could find, although it's not the council meeting that I listened to in its entirety. I didn't. So perhaps something got snuck in there, but not at the usual place. The oral communications period, atypically, was actually held at 6 o'clock, which they have not done usually. They usually put it at an uncertain time at the end of the afternoon agenda, which means you have to kind of listen through much of the city council to even be allowed to speak. And this time, however, interestingly enough, it was at 6 o'clock, and only one person spoke. It was Garrett Phillips, I believe his name is usually got what I call a right-wing rant, often really compact and full of concerns and claims. This time was about vaccine mandates, I think. It's quite possible I'd have agreed with him on some of what he said about the perniciousness of forcing people to get vaccinated sort of indiscriminately. But again, I didn't listen to it really very carefully. I was simply trying to see if there was much of anything other than him on this My apologies, Garrett, but it's true. So if you want to listen to the city council meeting, of course, you can always find it online. You can't get it on Firefox, or I can't, but if you get to go to a browser like Chrome, you can, or I can anyway. So let me get right into this because I'm kind of rushing to get this out by the 6 o'clock Thursday deadline here. Let's start with some experiences I had, conversations I had as well, with folks in the Benchlands on the 24th, where I wandered in for the first time in a while, really. The place had dried up considerably. It was no longer full of mud and puddles, but there were still people there in many tents. And here's my, some of my initial impressions to be followed by some of the conversations I had. And actually, we're going to begin with a guy who preferred to remain anonymous, but had a lot to say. How long have you been here?
I've been here since... I've been here for a year and a half.
And particular area, in the Benchlands, or...?
I've been moved around. When I got out of jail, I was gifted a van. Had that for a while. I rarely drove it, except for emergencies or getting gas, to run the heater and to keep it legally parked.
It was your home?
It was my quarantine. Cops towed it as soon as they saw me in it.
Was it personally directed, this towing of your van, without legal cause, or were you in a situation where you had problems because of registration, smogging, yada, yada, yada?
Well, I had just gotten out of jail. I didn't have a driver's license, let alone insurance or anything, but I kept the driving to a minimum, and doesn't matter if I have insurance or a driver's license. I drive slower than the oldest grandma you ever met.
So you were not a menace to society, is what you're telling me?
No, of course not.
Right. And how long ago did they steal your van?
A month after I got out, almost a month after I got out.
And then you moved in the
Try to get my driver's license, but during the COVID quarantine boom panicky moment, that was not an option. I didn't have a computer or anything to go through that route. All those routes were closed. I guess I could have tried to get insurance on it, but I really didn't have the money for it. And I was feeding myself and my little dog that I had acquired.
Name of the dog?
Freedom.
Still here?
Yeah, this is Freedom. She's got me under the
Freedom throat. And actually interviewed you before, but I could be mistaken.
You actually helped me out many years ago. I got maliciously hit by a guy in a Mercedes-Benz downtown. There's two officers that saw it walking down the sidewalk with one first alarm officer. And they all saw the incident. The guy, I motioned where I was going, and I looked behind me, made eye contact to make the right turn over by New Leaf, heading towards, not Starbucks, the Rite Aid. And anyway... the guy hit me. I jumped off. I was partially thrown off / jumped off. Landed on my feet. Messed my lower back up really bad. I stumbled backwards and I turned and fucking saw that he was using my bike and my bike trailer as a snowplow blade, just shoving it along while glaring at me. And I went up to the window, and I've never been a very social character, so I try to stay away from people. I've never had that great a judgment. So I went up to the window to punch him through the window, and I heard my name yelled out by one of the officers to stop, to turn around and fucking walk, to take a step back. So I did. I'm not trying to have any
fights with any officers, and I've never tried to fucking give them a hard time, even if I've been given a hard time. You know? Well, a traffic officer came, they called in a traffic cop, and he immediately whipped out his ticket book, went up to the guy over by his car, and they're laughing, chuckling, you know, reminiscing about old barbecues and fishing trips on the Nile River. Anyway, they obviously knew each other and knew each other quite well. I don't remember the officer's name. Never had a good memory, but he was a large guy. He came back with the ticket book and started just jotting stuff down. I asked him what he was doing, and he told me he was writing me a ticket. I asked him for what, and he told me he hadn't decided yet. And, you know, freaking, I questioned him about, you know, I was pretty upset, obviously. And I implored the two police officers on the street, walking the street, and the one first alarm officer to say something because they saw the whole incident. And they were just kind of pigeon-toed, shuffling their feet, looking at the ground, the sky, the birds, fucking anything. And finally the female spoke up, and the other one spoke up, and the other one spoke up. And the traffic cop got extremely irate, belligerently irate.
Toward
me. Yeah.
What did they say when they spoke up?
They said exactly what I said. The guy, I looked behind me, I motioned, and I made eye contact. Yeah. And I made my turn, went to go make my turn, and all of a sudden my bike stopped. I went over the handlebars, landed on my feet, and stumbled forward, turned around with a hurt back, and my bike was being shoved like a snowplow blade. And it damaged the bike pretty good. I had to take the rear rim off and stand on it and pull it just to separate enough so it wouldn't lock up the rear hub. The bob trailer was completely destroyed. A lot of my stuff was destroyed. Anyway.
This is when you were living outside?
Yeah. Yeah, I was getting ready for a road trip riding my bike up the coast. And that completely threw that in the trash. Completely ruined my day. And I'd been working really hard all summer all winter and spring to put that bike together, buy the parts, working at the homeless church and the bike church. And yeah, kind of sucked. So anyway, you walked up, it was a really busy day, lots of tourists out. You walked up out of nowhere with your microphone on a stick and started, I swear you were like Gandalf. You came in and just parted me and him, and he shut the fuck up, I shut the fuck up. You started asking questions and fucking, he took off.
He being?
The officer.
The one who was?
The traffic officer, yeah. The traffic cop, yeah. So anyway, it was pretty awesome. Definitely high marks for that.
It wasn't Venegas, Sergio Venegas.
I think it was. Yeah, large guy.
Weird.
I'm really bad with names, but.
So you've got no satisfaction and no restitution for any of this?
No. He wrote me a traffic summons or a court ticket of some kind or another. But it wasn't what he was going to try to get me for, which was reckless endangerment on a bicycle.
Indeed. So did you have to go to court for this, or did it pass?
I've been a hitchhiker since I was 14 years old. Unless I've been dragged into court, I don't go to court. I'm on parole. I'm fucking trying to change my life. All these things that are pretty much obvious and fucking everyday to most everyday people, well, it's not to me. I'm just learning how to function in society, and I'm trying.
I'm trying. I've been a hermit hitchhiker my whole life. Anyway.
So this happened what year, do you remember? More or less, a couple years?
No, I've had some pretty heavy head injuries over the years, and my memory's pretty much shot.
But it was a recorder on a stick.
Oh, yeah. So I remember that very well.
Must have been...
I remember you very well.
But I wasn't able to get the cop to take a report and help you out.
Well, he made an actual report of it. Yeah.
Was there any other...
No, I never called the... I never went to court, never called their insurance company, none of that.
How was your back?
My back's still pretty messed up. I've had a pretty bad back for a long time. And every day gives me a hard time. Every day. I throw my back out a couple dozen times a year.
That could be painful. That's happened to me once.
It is very painful. It is very painful. I throw my back out on a regular basis. My lower back, I don't know the numbers of the discs, but the lower back and my mid back, that really goes out. Right now, my mid back's out, and I'm having a hard time walking around.
Are you in pain as we talk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just chewed on about 2,000 milligrams aspirin. So I'm going to be feeling okay, a little bit better here. Take the edge off. I don't do hard drugs, so aspirins and ibuprofens are the way to go for me.
How's the Benchlands treating you?
Wish I was on an Islander 34, sailing around the bay. Living on that instead of living here.
This is not your first choice.
No. No, absolutely not. If I didn't have a really kind parole officer, I would have gotten transferred to a different place where I'm from, Northern California, and ran the risk of getting a terrible parole officer or a good one. As it is, I have a really kind parole officer right now, and I'm not going to risk that, giving that up.
How much longer do you have before you're off parole?
A year and a half.
And what have been the major challenges for you here in the campground? Aside from pain, injury, occasional theft, anything else?
I've seen places a lot worse than this, and I've seen a lot nicer places. I mean, it is what it is. It is what it is. I mean, you don't have stabbings in the park every day, so I guess it's not San Francisco. Or some other place where that's a regular thing every day, multiple times a day.
You were in San Francisco for a while?
Yeah, I've spent a little time in San Francisco hitchhiking through when I was younger. Yeah. Anyway, Santa Cruz doesn't have their homeless population that bad. They just need to understand that no matter what homeless population, a large percentage, not 80, 90, 100%, not a large percentage, but a decent percent are going to be on drugs, and they're going to be on hard drugs, and they don't care where the fuck they get their shit or how they get it or who they get it from. They're just out to get what they need. You know, and they don't give a fuck who they fucking damage, hurt, or anything along the way. And that's in every city, every society with homeless populations, because that's where the drug addicts find themselves. That's where they land, is in the streets. And they ain't gonna give up the drugs. So they remain in the streets and embrace it. And they fucking go nuts. Shit.
You say you're a man who keeps to himself. Have you had much in the way of interactions or found any friendships here or relationships?
Yeah, I have a good neighbor here. I've gotten into several fist fights down here. I had one crazy person claiming he was a Satanist or a pagan, Satanist, or some such nonsense murder one of my chickens. And another one of my animals turned up in a cooler, tied up, drowned down by the river. So I came up here from down below to get away from the other people and try to get a little distance.
Has that been successful?
A little bit. I mean, people tend to go where they're going to go, and I'm not. This is public property. I can't tell anybody else where they can go and where they can't. It's just when they fucking fuck up and do something, I can fucking stand up and do something about it. Because I am a man in this world, I am a human being in this world, and I will not be trampled over by anybody. And as long as I don't put myself in the wrong, fucking, I stay in the right, dude. Fucking fuck up. You know, I don't mind smacking some twacker doodle fucking come around to steal my fucking possessions, my stuff, my home, anything.
Now, the location you're at, which I'm not going to describe, but how many folks are in this particular smaller encampment that you're in here?
If you want.
Probably seven.
And is it a sort of a self-selected community? Have you all kind of agreed here?
Four of which just showed up in the last day. So, I mean, I think people are getting moved from somewhere else to over here, getting shoved around. That's why I haven't left here. I mean, that's why I haven't left here, because they're just going to shove me around, dude. Doesn't matter where you go, what you do. If you're homeless, you're going to be hunted here on the streets if you're not where you're told to be. And it used to not even be like that. It used to be if you were anywhere. I remember for quite a few years down here, if you were homeless on the streets, you were a target by the police and the rangers. The city rangers, the state rangers, park and rec, all of them fucking had this giant trifecta fucking dong plowing into the homeless ass. And it's fucked up, dude. It was fucked up. They did that shit for fucking like 20, 30 years. Probably longer. How's it going, man?
Are you asking or offering?
Asking.
I don't have any smokes either.
Lo siento.
I wish I had some. Could use a cigarette.
So, you're an animal man rather than, should we say, a fan of human company. You say you're just telling me why. Can you repeat that? Are you good for that?
I'm just trying to. When I got out of jail, I knew I was going to be on the streets homeless. I just wanted to get a dog. I'm never happy unless I have a dog in my life. Always fucking miserable. Always angry and violent and miserable. All that in one, fucking, if I don't have a dog in my life. So, you know, that was my first goal. Get a dog and get a boat. Get a sailboat. Get the hell away from the mass population of people. Seemed logical to me.
And you've been successful in doing that somewhat.
Slowly. I've gotten a tender, a dinghy. I'm still looking for a boat. I got an outboard, got a lot of the things I could really use, but solar setup. But I'm still trying to find a boat. Still trying to find a hull that floats. Don't care if it's gutted. I'm good with carpentry. Just trying to get off the streets. I can't do this anymore. And unfortunately, my spine is so messed up. I spent 16, 17 years hitchhiking around the country with anywhere between 100 to 180-pound pack on my back every day. Many, many, many days, many hours out of the day. And, you know, that's what I first learned when I fell out of the system. As a ward of the state of California at the age of 14. That was the first thing I learned.
I hit the streets. I said I had enough, a little boy, and fucking walked out the building. And no matter how many times they caught me, I kept walking right out of the buildings until the buildings began to have bars. And I just had a small, little bitty, fractional taste of what freedom was. And fucking, I had never known anything like it before that, besides very strict control over me. And, you know, I wouldn't give it up. Not for nothing. So I wound up on the streets, Sacramento, in the middle of winter. And 14 years old, I met a couple hitchhikers. Took me hitchhiking down here to Santa Cruz. And fucking, I've been hitchhiking all over the country. I got to find another way to travel. I can't stop traveling, but I just can't do it the way I used to. I'm trying to find an old boat. And that's really
have you
the
done
only
much
time.
Sailing? Or?
I have. I had a 1969 Cal 30 by Jensen Marine. It was a great boat. My memory's pretty messed up.
But you're aiming to do it again.
Yeah.
But I'm going to cut into this account with some music from David Rovics. It's a song called Moron, which Rovics describes on his website this way. On November 26, 2002, a Canadian government minister referred to President George W. Bush as a moron. She then lost her job.
Francoise Ducrot lost her job as Director of Communications. She was representing Canada at a meeting of the NATO nations. When she had the gall to say what was very clear, something everybody knew, which they didn't want to hear. In the global mafia, there's no doubt who's the Don. But everybody knows that George Bush is a moron. Maybe you voted for him because you like to shoot your gun. Or perhaps you own an oil company and you're happy that he won. Well, if that is the case, you know you've got to take it on the chin and thank the gods for the doctors of the spin. Because if it weren't for sound bites, then just like his Uncle Ron, there'd be no one left who could deny that George Bush is a moron. Protested and said it wasn't fair. He didn't even win the vote. He should not be in there. But maybe you still have some dignity and you try to put on the best face, because you just can't come to grips. Seems like it just shouldn't be the case. It's as if there's this really stupid cop with a nuclear baton. Not only is he evil, but George Bush is a moron. To the end, just a few more years and we'll be around the bend. If the world is still standing, not yet blown up into pieces, with a rally at the ballot box, we can see that this nightmare ceases. Still you look over your shoulder at what might happen when he's gone. Once it captures your attention that John Kerry is a moron.
It's really the only logical housing I could fucking think of. You know, cities are doing ridiculous things with the funding they receive, like $50 million to house fucking 125 people or some such nonsense for a year. That's insane. That's insane. That's insanity. I mean, who the hell goes and takes a bunch of the people's money to be reallocated back to the people, and they go and pull some fucking shit like that? It's insane. And only insane people run this country, so I'm not surprised. It's the same old shit, same bullshit, swimming around in the same murky, nasty fucking fishbowl. And I just want to get a little bit farther away from it.
the restrictions in traveling and hitchhiking have extremely increased, and it's just ridiculous, man. You can't hitch. Freedom. Come on, girl. Little lady. Simmer down. Hey.
And the sun is setting as our narrator talks to his pooch and brings Freedom over.
It's really hard hitchhiking before this COVID, but after this COVID, you can't hitchhike anymore. People, the media and every branch of bullshit fucking over quite a few years have been trying to make hitchhiker, demonize hitchhikers and hitchhiking and traveling without means. And just trying to get from one place to the next and experience life. Call me a beggar, call me a pauper, whatever the hell. I'm just a guy living down low. I don't mind living low. It's just I'm having a hard time doing it these years. I got a big-ass hole in my leg. I got another one up above it. They get cold at night. I sure would love to have a diesel stove and a nice 30, 32, 35-foot vessel. Sure would be nice. Be able to warm up at night. Never had a home. I'm trying to find a boat. I'm looking on scouring Craigslist all the time. Unfortunately, I'm not no fucking shipwright. A lot of the vessels that do pop up on Craigslist, if I tried to take one down from San Francisco down here to Monterey Bay to work on it and repair it over a year or two, last couple years of my parole, I probably wouldn't even make it down here before floundering. Floundering. I'm really stoned.
Yeah, we got your drift.
Anyway, so there are a few boats out there I've been looking at. Unfortunately, a lot of the good ones, the good ocean cruising yachts from many years back, they find themselves in scrap yards. And that sucks, man.
What should I call you for the purpose of this interview? What name should we go by? I'll call you anybody. I got another person waiting in my vehicle over there, so I'm gonna let you sum up or say anything else you want to conclude with. Thank you for talking about life for me.
Thank you for the conversation. You're a nice man. And thank you for saving my neck many years ago from one of these very angry police officers.
It can be very deadly, too. That can happen.
I'm saying all the officers here are angry and hateful, but there are definitely a number of them who definitely have some deep-seated issues.
You should be on free radio on the net, and it's going to be archived so you can get to it whenever you want. Here's a card which describes it. It's on the find it on the Huff Archives.
Kevin's right behind me.
Okay, well, let me grab him and thank you, anybody. Anybody?
Anybody, yeah.
Okay, well, it's around 5:15. I'm here at Benchlands on the 24th of January talking with
Kevin.
We're having a game of chess as we chat. But Kevin, you've kind of relocated your campsite. Is that due to flooding that you did that, or why did that happen?
Oh, completely because of the flooding. I was in a puddle. It was 6 inches deep. Yeah, it was horrible. It took forever to thaw out.
And I understand at least some of your animals have survived.
Yeah, I'm down 2 goats now, unfortunately. I hardly even want to talk about it.
I shouldn't even mention, except that your colleague there mentioned that was the situation.
Yeah, I'll say it. Let me get into it, okay? I'm about ready to quit. okay? When I came here to Santa Cruz with my two dogs and a goat and walked from St. Francis to Food Not Bombs and McDonald's and did my circuit, I have never felt so much happiness and joy on the day-to-day. I'm like, I could be homeless forever. What's wrong with this? People smiling, buying me coffee, lunch, loving my goats, telling me that I made their day, you know? So then I get the bright idea, because any idea is either it's feasible, but if it's feasible, is it scalable? And if it's scalable, is it sustainable? I can never find out. I always prove these beautiful, feasible ideas, but I can't scale them. I tried to scale it. I ended up getting four more goats. And the little one, and with the plan of leasing them out, and all it costs for the lease is $10 a month, which goes into a pool to support vet care for all the animals that are part of our ranch. I was hoping to include a lot of other homeless people's animals in the equation. And some content to go online. Content is everything. And I got a woman who's interested, Christina, is interested in paying to form a nonprofit organization out of Rancho Mascota with, you know, we do promotional stuff and birthday parties and, you know. But, you know, I'm ready to scrap the idea because now I've got one goat who passed away. He got into the dog food while I was trying to wrangle all the goats to take them out for their walk, which is very difficult to do because they've grown a lot. They're bottle babies. And a goat, like a horse or a sheep, they don't normally do it, like horse and sheep. They're a safer animal to keep, but they can flounder. If they get too rich of food, everybody asks me, what do the goats eat? Like, I got to buy goat chow. You know, no, they eat the world around them. And if they're free to browse and somebody sits with them or walks with them while they browse and eat, they get the most healthy diet. It's a better diet than on a ranch with hay and water. I got a lot of people interested in walking them with me, interested in the goats, saying they're interested in helping me, but nobody's showing up to actually get on a routine and learn what to do with them, and so that, you know, my neighbors can break away with a goat or two, and they can go and walk around and get free lunch and money, and it isn't just that. It's building a bridge between homeless people and housed people. And it was beautiful. But I'm getting ready to give up. I really am. They're too hard to handle. I hurt my wrist really bad when the dogs chased a squirrel and knocked me off my skateboard yesterday. So now I'm trying to handle them with only one arm. So if this gets out there and anybody wants to help, you know, please, please do. But put me on the schedule, okay? Just not the other way around. Because I can't even keep track anymore of how many people have said, oh, yeah, I'll come with you, and then nobody does. So
that's the story.
That's a sad story.
How has life changed in the camp generally that you've seen in the last 2 or 3 months since the flood?
It thinned out a lot, and then it mixed up a lot between, like, I see people that I'm not sure if they're still my neighbors or not, if they live in this camp or live elsewhere, but I recognize them from here. I know a lot of people that moved around, which is never any good, you know. But then again, even when we stay in one spot, my other disappointment with, you know, being in a homeless community in Santa Cruz is I could never form a camp of 5 or 6 people. Now, Justin's great, and Dreadeye joined us recently, but you need even more than 2 people. You know, you need 6 or 7 people in a camp that know each other and have been camping together for a while so that we can keep an eye on each other's stuff without having to be in camp all the time. That's been another huge obstacle for me trying to launch my goat thing, is trying to hold on to property that I've lost. That I gotta say, and I hate to cut on my neighbors, but why do poor people steal off of poor people all the time? You don't know who it is. It only takes 1 person out of 200 to be stealing all the stuff. But still, you'd be sick if I gave you the list of things I've lost. 3 bicycles, 3 laptops, 2 tablets, 4 phones, and now I get down to no personal property now. I've got nothing except my goats and a backpack full of artwork. I laid off of using my devices. I'm like, great, no device. Look at this. 2 months without a device, and look what I'm doing. I'm writing by hand. I'm drawing. I'm reading. Loved it. But now, just today, I went to St. Francis for my lunch. And God bless St. Francis for handing out those lunches. But they're no food, not bombs. They make it clear that they don't want any hobos anywhere near the property eating their free lunch. Sorry to cut on you, St. Francis, about that. But, you know, some chairs make us feel like human beings, not like, you know. But anyway, I walked to the top of the hill so I could eat my lunch out of sight. And the hobos that were near me, you know, got all pissed off because one of my goats got away from me and got near his soda. So I gathered up my goats and animals, and I had four at the time with me, and rounded them up and left the backpack behind. I walked back to where I know I left it, and they claim they didn't see it. And I said, there was nothing valuable in it. And they said, I know. Yeah, you know, don't you? Please, did my artwork. I was going to do First Friday. I was all excited about that. And, you know, now I just got one piece.
Well, in honor of your most recent theft.
Business. I can't have a house. I can't have anything I've ever built, made, drawn, carved. I can't have any of it. I'm not allowed to have property.
And if I take your permission.
No, if I take this chess set, I got to carry around a chess set. Then I got to sit around and make sure my chess set doesn't get stolen. Then I got to ask people if they want to play chess. And nobody want to play chess. They'll say tomorrow. But, you know, I'll have just yet another toy, another thing that hangs around, never gets used, that I got to organize and move every time I move. And so thank you for the offer of a nice gift, but it's even a better gift that you brought me your chess set and you're playing a game with me. Because yeah. I'm willing to admit that I am more lonely than I have ever been in my life. I hate to admit it, but I'm courageous enough to admit it. So if this hits the airwaves and anybody wants to be my friend, like a real friend, not somebody that you just, hey, how's it going? What's new? Yeah, nice coach. Okay, great. Yeah, catch you later. Which is wonderful and nice. I'm not knocking it. But wow, you know, it never goes any further than that after a year. And I can't understand why, because there's so many people in my situation, you know, where they're single and, you know, and this isn't a romance thing. That's the other thing about being asexual. You're such a square peg. You can't just be, it's always lurks in the background of a friendship if it's going to be a romance. I hate that. It's another thing I can't stand about our current society. So I wish, yeah, I just wish we could make a couple friends that would be interested in doing some cool things with our freedom. We have freedom. We're not chained to our possessions. We're not chained to a job. We're like retired people. But we get in our little homeless routines that we can't break out of. And it's like everybody's like a 70 or 80-year-old person who just lives by their routine. And their, you know, and it's great to get happiness out of little things in life, like your morning coffee and your, you know. But, you know, what is it that you can do every day a little bit so that after a year, you've got something to show for it? Nobody does that. Everybody seems to me is doing a day-to-day thing, and not just among the homeless. This is why my family and I don't connect anymore. Just a day-to-day instant gratification thing, whether it's, you know, a slot machine or a television show or, a, you know, nothing that is artistic and creative. Everybody consumes everybody else's art and doesn't make any of their own. That's what I'm finding. And I made some, and now it all got stolen before I could even present it. So now you know what kind of mood I'm in.
You're pretty mellow for a person who's experienced that, I'll say that.
Yeah, but it's because I've experienced disappointment my entire life. I know everybody has, and I know that sounds like a whiny ass thing to say.
Doesn't sound that way to me.
Okay. But really, I've done some real awesome things, and it just can never, if I can scale them, I can't sustain them.
Explain what scaling means.
Scaling means going, all right, economy of scale. means that the thing you're doing has to be the right size. Now, a lot of people think start out small and grow, but no, if you want to... No, I can't even watch mine. Mine got missing today.
A bike. Do you want for a bike?
No. When we can form a seven-person camp that has an agreement of, okay, this person's going to be in camp from this time to this time, watching everybody's stuff and not distracted at anything else, then we'll do that. That'll be great. But until then, to each their own. And I'd advise you not to have any stuff if you don't want your stuff to get stolen. Man, see, I'm venting, so I'm going to probably be embarrassed when this hits the airwaves. Yeah, but
that's an honest feeling. You know,
yeah, that's how I'm being honest.
I don't object to it. I mean, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, disappointment. You know, like the lawn bowlers, the very first thing I tried, I made that won't you be my neighbor sign. I tried to hand them $120 through the fence and join their club, and I signed up a bunch of other of my homeless neighbors, and they led me on for a month and a half till finally they said, we don't want a lawn bowl with you people. We don't trust you with our equipment.
That's when the whole camp was on.
Yeah, when the camp was up there. Well, yeah, around
San Lorenzo Park in the upper park.
Yeah, and I did all sorts of improvements to their park. I cleaned all the weeds and stuff. Me and Manny spent 100 hours doing that. You know, we could have had a small claims case against them for everything they did, but they wouldn't even give us the address and the information we needed to file our claim, to arbitrate it. Because how unfair is that? You know, take 50 hours of work from a couple of homeless people that think they're going to join your club, and then a month later you're like, no, you can't join our club?
If you consider homeless people to be worthless, then who cares? It doesn't matter how much you exploit them. That's the nature of dehumanizing people.
Oh, exactly. And it's so fucking ironic. Oh, can you say F words on this show? Yeah, it's so fucking sick that they leave their $1 million property to come to public property and play their games while they call me a loser. I fucked up. That's why I'm in this situation. You know?
Yeah.
No. I built a house in 2006 that was worth $330,000 when I started and $180,000 when I was finished because the inflated prices of the real estate market caused by mortgage brokers, and I was one, real estate agents, and lawyers just inflated the price of property beyond what it's really worth. But it's really worth that if they can convince some other sucker to pay it. So now we've got $1 million properties where you could tear down that house and rebuild it for $250,000. I know, I was a contractor. So the land underneath it is worth $1 million for what, 8,000 square feet of land? We're pretty living pretty large here. I should see what the value of this property is, you know?
Your move. So, how has the camp changed, if it has at all, if you've noticed? It sounds like, you know, at the moment, it's not the best time to ask you about the broader scene, but...
Well, that theft today wasn't at this camp, but nevertheless, it's gotten a lot more mellow, let me say that. There's a lot less, I've heard less fighting and less violence. Oh, no.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the game and let you have the last word on this interview.
Oh. Well, hope I didn't embarrass myself too much on this interview, but that's the last word, guys. Everybody in Santa Cruz, you've been so kind. I love you all. Everybody's nice and thoughtful. I hate to throw in a but, you know, Let's do something real together, okay? Let's do a hike. Let's plan something and make it happen. Nothing too big, nothing not feasible, but let's do something together because I can't do it alone anymore, and I'm gonna have to get rid of the goats and move on if I can't get something to happen.
Is there any way people can contact you, or shall I have them just contact me?
Email is always best, you know, and that's K as in Kevin, L as in Lionel, and my last name, Leland, L-E-L-A-N-D, @gmail.com. KLLeland@gmail.com.
You heard it here. Give them an email.
Oh, and another thing is Rancho Mascota. It means mascot ranch or pet ranch in Spanish, Santa Cruz. So look up Rancho Mascota Santa Cruz if you're on Facebook, and please join my Facebook group. And then we can probably announce our event there and plan our event, and hopefully by the end of February, do it.
Take it. And we've been talking with?
Yeah, and I'm Kevin from Heaven, the goat guy.
Thank you, Kevin from Heaven, goat guy man. And this is a song from David Rovick's song, The Songbird Sings. He writes, Mahmoud al-Kayed, age 10, was killed by an Israeli sniper on November 7th in 2003. He was one of many children killed for the crime of seeking to catch songbirds in an area where they are often present near the border fence separating Gaza from Israel. Like the others killed in identical circumstances, Mahmoud was not trying to get over the fence or to commit any acts of violence. He was a child in an olive grove, being a child in an olive grove, trying to help his poor family survive in the open-air prison that is Gaza.
Was another Friday morning. I was among the olive trees, out looking for birds to catch my father, his friends, and me. I had my string and net and a nimble eye there beside the farmer's field where the songbirds fly. When you're catching birds, the world disappears, and a thousand songs of autumn are all that fills your ears. They sing their songs so brightly at the dawning of the day. They fly back and forth over the fence where we must stay away. You can see the birds beneath the clouds, watch them spread their wings, listen to the wind. And the songbird sings. It's so good to come here, so far from all the sound, all the shooting and the shouting and the tanks upon the ground. I just wish I could live here beside this olive grove. Just me, my friends and family, and a small wood-burning stove. You can see the birds beneath the clouds, watch them spread their wings, listen to the wind, and the songbird sings. Last week I caught three sparrows, it was quite a day. Now I'm bound for glory, that's what they say. I can hear them talk about me, shedding tears upon a sack. Inside there lies a child with four bullets in his back. You can see the birds beneath the clouds, watch them spread their wings, listen to the wind, and the songbird sings. You can see the birds beneath the clouds, watch them spread their wings, listen to the wind, and the songbird sings.
And those previous, is one of the few guys who, probably the only guy who keeps goats in the Benchlands, and is still around. And a fellow camper of his, anybody, as he calls himself, at least for the purposes of that interview. The next day I was again in the benchlands, kind of walking through the main area. I'd only been talking at a peripheral area in the benchlands, an area near the water street. But I ran into more people, and here are their voices.
Today is the 25th of January. It's 5 to 2. I'm standing in San Lorenzo, along the bridge between San Lorenzo Park and I guess it's River Street. And folks are coming up here.
Howdy.
Hello.
And I'm looking at the tents on the south side of the bridge, counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Most of the tents that were in the fenced-off area were just no longer there. I guess it was flooded out. The only communication that I've had so far with people is one woman in a white tent right underneath the bridge, nearly, who said wanted to exchange $3 for scratch. I'm not sure what she meant.
Oh.
Now, of course, there's many a tent on the other side. Multiple tents and kind of complexes of tents, but also many single tents. Looks like all the watered area is largely dried up. There are a few power cords running across the area. Not many. The clock is ringing 2. It's 2 o'clock on the 25th, that's why.
Remind me. So I was the guy with Mike. The office is off Soquel, right behind, kind of behind Sweets and the Nude, in that area. And we were cutting trees, and you came and did an interview. How do I feel about the
story? Remember? And what was your? Do you remember much about the interview? I'm doing interviewing
you just
now.
You just asked me like how to get this program, how to get in there, and I told him I was on parole, and the state has me get a job, and they helped me cut trees, and it was fun, and I enjoyed the job, but then my supervisor got strung on cocaine, and he got fired. He started selling the equipment, and he was a rap.
And now, living here or just passing by?
I'm living off up the street a little bit more. I'm homeless, but I don't feel like because I'm homeless I'm done. You know, that's up to the person to keep motivated and keep going. You know, I can easily surrender and not give a crap about life, but life's too beautiful to give up. You know, just because I'm homeless doesn't mean I'm worthless. I can still work if everybody has a job for me. I do general labor, contracting, whatever you guys got, I can do it. Except for electricity.
Are you getting much work?
Not enough now because I ain't looking really. I'm being lazy like an idiot. But I should because I still got all my tools. At least I haven't sold my tools. I haven't clocked my tools. I still have, tools I need to for work. Skill saw, whatever I need.
Are you being hassled where you live?
I get hassled even if I didn't live right here. They hassle me from in an apartment or home or whatever. Cops always harass the people they profile. So they, if they know you, they fuck with you.
Dig it. When was the last time you had a cop incident?
Last year I got arrested on October 11th.
Hey,
and how'd it go?
It was fun because I had to sleep and I wasn't sleeping. I had myself. I was on dope and none no more. But now I'm focused and I'm doing what I got to do.
No hassles in the last few months?
Mm-hmm. No, nothing.
Police aren't profiling you now.
I don't give them a chance to. I don't come out much. You know, I stand behind closed doors and I just try to stay focused on me.
What brings you to the camp?
I just saw my friend, so I just sat down and had a cigarette with him.
Dig it.
Yeah.
And you want to say what your name is?
Carlos Gomez.
I'm Robert Carlos. Robert Norris.
Greetings. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. What's your impression of this particular camp?
It's horrible. Look at this. I mean, it was better, I guess, when they had a fence because they were more organized, more in the size, and not just everywhere scattered. You know, right now it just looks like the city don't give a fuck. The city don't give a fuck. The county, the state, the whole country. I mean, they get into other Other business doesn't concern them and help other countries, but they can't help with their own. What the hell is that?
Have you been constantly living here in Santa Cruz? Or
44 years.
And how much of it has been outside?
None. The last 2 years only.
And why these last 2 years? What happened to put you outside?
I had knee surgery, and I was out of work for like 3 months, and my sister couldn't afford the rent, and it just got bad for her. And I was getting disability, but nothing enough to help. I mean, I gave her half of what I got, but it wasn't enough for the bills.
How's she doing?
She's great because she's with her daughters living with them. I'm happy. That's why I prefer her being indoors than me. If I had to do it all over again, I'd do it again.
So no hassles while you're living, even though you are outside now?
No. I don't really do much to get hassled, you know? I mean, I just try to stay to myself. Because when you're with the crowd, that's when really you go bad. Solo people are homeless, you know? People who ride alone are pretty much homeless, so they say. But, I mean, in a group, it's always more tension.
Are you are living alone by yourself?
Me and a girl, yeah.
And how's she doing?
She's sleeping. She's fine. She's doing good. Lucky her, she's sleeping. I had to go look for work, but nothing popped up, so I figured I'll take a shoulder here and go home now.
And we've been talking with?
Carlos Gomez.
Thank you, Carlos.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Talking with?
Johnny Rambler.
Hey, Johnny. I'm Robert Norris.
Nice to meet you, Robert Norris.
Greetings, man. So you got your left arm is in a cast. You had an accident a couple days ago.
Sure. Probably skateboarding or biking. I had a concussion. Can't remember. It was probably either doing something on a mountain bike or skateboarding.
And this is your residence here?
Yeah. Well, I find, like, this is a place where I sleep. She's a friend of mine, and she lets me crash out and stuff like that. Yeah.
And how... Are you other places to go, or are you just pretty much a Roman?
Well, I roam, but I have places to go if, like, I can go if it's an emergency, but it's kind of hard because you have to carry your stuff with you wherever, you know.
And do you have a place to, store it?
Well, yeah, they do. They do.
No.
Stop it.
Questions are for you putting it out.
It's free radio. It's cool.
So people will say, what about... People say, how interesting, or they'll say, what a shame.
His shirt is saying an anti-cop statement. Now, yeah, so...
No, it's a good point you make, though, you know.
She does. She makes a lot of good points.
Yeah. I mean, what are you asking all this shit for if you're not going to do anything about it? I had lunch already. I thank you. Let's give it to someone who needs it. Thank you, though. Appreciate it.
You don't need it.
I just have... No, I really did. I mean, look at old Mr. Belly here.
I've lost that problem.
Okay.
So... Well, I should be talking to the resident because she knows she knows more than you do about what's going on down here. What's your name? What do you want to say?
Sandy.
And this is your place. I don't know.
I talked to you before. We did an interview before.
I vaguely remember something, but not much. How have things changed since then? Let me ask you that.
Same.
No change.
Mm-mm. Same thing.
Better, worse, or just exactly the same?
The same, but more trash.
Less trash pickups?
Yeah. They need to pick more trash up.
To store things, you would go down to...
People should now trash.
Is it my impression, or are there less tents around than there were?
There's less, yeah.
Is there much of a community sense down here, would you say? What would you say about that? More community, less community?
Less, more community.
Do you trust your neighbors?
Some of them. There's a lot of people that rip off things, they steal.
That's what I hear from some. Are people coming in and giving stuff, making stuff available
for... Yeah, they are. Like today we got toast sandwiches and salad.
You're offering me a sandwich.
I know. Yeah, they do offer stuff here. Good. Things come good here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The bad thing, they rip off people and the fights. That's not a good thing. The dogs, they don't feed their dogs.
So the dogs roam and look for something to eat?
Yes, that's not good. That's not
good. Well, it looks like the tents, I don't know, is there much protection from the rain and
there's a lot of rats. A lot of rats. So many rats. Yeah, I got rat traps.
You're pointing to...
Rat traps.
That's a blue rat trap?
Over there, rat trap.
I'm looking, where is that rat trap?
Right there, those two things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I better not step over there.
Yeah.
That is, looks
it
like more, of a mouse trap than a rat trap.
It works, though.
Good.
Because I don't have food in my tent. This I will give away all day to people that need it. Yeah.
Does this happen on a daily basis? You're looking at a bag of sandwiches. Weekly basis?
No, this just happened.
The Togo's, it says. Is this somebody who just went and bought a lot of Togo's food?
It's over there. You want to go over there. All of it's over there in the end. That you're giving away sandwiches. Yeah.
And that does happen regularly?
No, not really. But they give a lot of food away, yes, but not Togo's. Yeah.
Well, it looks good if I were hungrier.
Yeah.
And it looks like you're moving on.
Yeah.
We've been talking with, if you want to say.
Sandy.
Thank you, Sandy, and I apologize for not remembering much.
It's okay.
You got a better memory than I do.
Have a great day.
You too. As I walk toward Water Street, the tents are, maybe there are more tents than there were in a way. At least there's more space being kind of cultivated. On the park side looks like there's a more area covered by tents that was once sort of open ground in the center. And the other side, similarly, goes all the way to the orange netting, which kind of cuts things off at the river. And it's still, I see there's a bulletin board still. Somebody is getting a haircut there. I'm sitting in a chair. And I guess there's a place to plug in your electrical equipment or your, I should say, at least your phones. And even have a Where the Dog sign. And a sharps container on a post. A cat. It'll be good against the rats. Good table. Food for the eaten?
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
County workers, the union.
Hey, how you doing there?
I'm good.
Didn't recognize you from the side there.
The union brought them.
How's the union doing? Are they on strike at the moment? Or?
Yeah, that's what I hear. But they brought a bunch of bags of breakfast sandwiches, and then they brought a bunch of bags of ham, turkey, roast beef, veggie. So I figure it's what they ordered for their
strikers
members.
Leftovers.
Yeah, and what was left over.
Well, it's edible, I hope. Looks
yeah,
like it is.
They're fresh, like today, brand new fresh. So,
what about some fresh poetry, Mama Shea?
I don't know if I have anything you haven't heard before offhand right now.
Well, you better get busy, Shannon.
I'm stretching my brain here. No, but did you hear the other interview I did? It was pretty good.
That you did for me or did you did from someone
1080.
Else?
1080.
No, no. How can people find that interview?
The sandwich? Yeah, I'll go grab it. It's on the show, some whatever his name is, Homeless, something like that.
I need to look it up and tell you about it.
It was
35 minutes.
Okay, I'd like to hear it.
Let me think.
You're opening up a
sandwich.
Union donated sandwich.
It goes, let's see. I know I don't smile or laugh as much as I cry, and I wander lost and ask why my children aren't by my side, why hopes and dreams must die. Why men hide behind their pride. I see us all steal and thieve, making ourselves believe better you than me. If it takes a village to raise a child, where do I go to find my village? Because everything I thought was good and loving, I have seen leveled and pillaged. And yet they tell me that being here itself is a privilege.
Yeah.
Sounding good so far.
And then it says, and then I see us all steal and deceive, making ourselves believe better you than me. What happened to integrity? All of this has brought me to my knees. And I need to write another verse because I don't stay on my knees for long. I always end up coming back up. No matter how much I'm thieved or lied to or knocked down, I always manage to get back up again. So I realized that, sort of like Garth Brooks in writing that story about all my friends in low places, and he heard it on the radio and realized that it was missing a verse, and that was the part where he got back up and went back to his friends in low places, because it had ended originally with him, like, being up with, you know, people that were better than him, supposedly. And so I've been doing that poem, and I realized I need to write another verse because I never stay on my knees for long. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. Like, I got thieved again. They came and stole everything. And it's people who don't have any hustle have to steal from those who do, because those of us that do will always come back up again. And those that don't have to steal from those who have. You know what I mean?
I do.
So I'm like, I have to write another verse in which I, you know, stand back up and claim my own, but I haven't done it yet.
This is your tent, though. I know where you are.
Yeah, this is my tent. I started the food pantry down here.
That's what I heard.
My belief was that I don't always want to eat what they want to cook me when they want to cook it for me. You know, sometimes I want what I want to eat. And especially when it's cold and people are using heat sources anyway, they might as well have food to cook on those heat sources. So I talked to Food Not Bombs and got adopted by Grey Bears. And so now we get food deliveries 2 to 3 times a week and distribute it. And as much food as I'm going through, I realized that it wasn't just me that felt that way about wanting to have your own food on your own terms, on your own time. Because we're going through 50 cases of canned goods, 100 pounds of produce, and 26 gallons of milk every 5 days.
And we're going to pause for another musical break. Here's a song called Miami. In November 2003, Miami police drenched their city with massive amounts of tear gas directed at thousands of protesters who had come to voice opposition to the latest trade being negotiated at the time, the Free Trade Area of the Americas. Many people who were injured by steel-coated rubber bullets and other so-called non-lethal weaponry employed indiscriminately by the Miami police, who also engaged in other tactics such as letting local African-American residents know that there would be no consequences if they felt like mugging any of these protesters. None did, though many went out of their way to inform us, mostly white protesters from out of town, that they had been encouraged by the police to do so.
Gathered to make the planet freer for free trade, to create a better business climate for all the profits they had made. Surrounded by an army, there for their defense, armed with APCs and copters and lots of common sense. Behind a fence, behind a wall that shouts, you shall not pass. Broken skulls, plastic bullets, and 1,000 gallons of tear gas. And the world leaders kept on talking behind the moat upon the hill. And they boasted of prosperity in their latest free trade bill. They thank God, they thank Boeing, they thank the World Bank. They thank the firepower of the M1 tank. They defended their positions and the glory of their class. With broken skulls, plastic bullets, and 1,000 gallons of tear gas. The streets we chant bandit. We have no clubs or guns. We've just come to tell the people the evil ways this system runs. But the truth can set us free. The rulers all knew well. So they drowned the truth with captors and the ringing of the bell. With their teasers on our bodies and our faces in the grass. Broken skulls, plastic bullets, and 1,000 gallons of tear gas. Cameras hid behind the lines, 500,000 men in blue. When the rich men moved their lips, they recorded them on cue. The occupation of a city by an army of police wasn't worthy of a mention from the reporters of the peace. Neither were the wounded children or the boarded glass. Or the broken skulls, plastic bullets, and 1,000 gallons of tear gas.
Because we're going through 50 cases of canned goods, 100 pounds of produce, and 26 gallons of milk every 5 days.
Well, now, has this been cut back after the flood?
It was cut back slightly, and I don't think it really had anything to do with the flood so much as I took a mental health break. I went through a really painful, not very fair breakup. It wasn't even a breakup. So anyways, he left me for his ex, and it kind of fucked me up. So I went and stayed up at the hotel I'd been staying at, and when I came back, everything had been stolen, and the donations had gone down, and I think that's because I haven't been here.
When did you come back?
I came back a couple days ago.
Well, it looks like you were set up again.
Yeah, well, the tent was never taken down. It was just the stuff outside of it or inside of it was stolen. People just went in and ransacked it. So I'm trying to gather up my stuff because I do have people out here who are aware that my stuff got stolen and it's coming back slowly. But I will be talking to Food Not Bombs and the Grey Bears again and getting our donations increased because people can fill in for me, but apparently nobody can replace me, which is kind of nice to know that this was sort of my baby and it's going to remain my baby because nobody else seems to be able to manage it and get the donations the way that I can. So one good thing that came out of it is I got some labor to help me clean up and keep things organized. So I don't have to do that all on my own anymore because it was really hard for me with my back issues and just everything to unload all of the, every single case of food that was here, and we were getting about 100 cases a week, went through my hands at some point. I was lifting and carrying, and I'm technically not supposed to be walking. I'm supposed to be in a wheelchair. So it was causing me major physical discomfort to do that. And so it's nice that my absence made some people jump in and take over the physical labor part.
You have more support now than you did.
Yeah, well, when they realized that if I wasn't here, it wasn't going to happen, they sort of jumped
up. Now that you're back, are they going to leave it all to you again?
Probably, chances are, yeah. But hopefully not for a couple of weeks so that I have a chance to let my back recover. But I just keep plowing along. It's like I can't let it go away because so much food is going that I know that it's needed. I mean, I wouldn't be going through so much food if it wasn't needed, you know? And so I can't turn my back on it no matter, you know, how greedy people can be or disrespectful. They stole all of my stuff, like every display. I had an 8-foot-high, 5-foot-wide shelving on wheels.
I think I saw that.
Somebody took all the food off of it and stole it in broad daylight. Nobody noticed.
Or nobody cared.
Jeremy, the guy who works here, was like right over there when it happened.
He noticed. He said, oh, it's moving away of its own accord.
Yeah. And I got crates from the county that he didn't give me for 2 weeks. And it's like, it's hard when the people that you're doing it for are disrespectful about it. And then the city is bitching at me about it. Like, I'm catching it from both sides, you
know.
You're
doing it again.
But I'm still doing it.
You're stuck. You got to break your habit. Break the food-giving habit.
Yeah, no, and like I said, the only reason is because so much food is going away that it has to be needed. And I'm, as frustrating as it is, I can't turn my back on all the times that I was hungry in the middle of the night or in the morning, and I knew there was no place to go for food, and God, I wish there had been a place like this for me to go.
Well, there was Baker's Square, of course.
That was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. Has the population of the area changed much as a consequence of the flood or just Depot Park or that sort of thing?
As the county's strategic arm, you know, people have to realize that, like, the officers might not be real bright, but their sort of team of strategists are pretty bright, and they know exactly what they're doing by leaving us down here when it floods. It's not like this is new. It's not like it's the first time it's flooded down here. It does it every year. They know exactly what they're doing, and they've managed to accomplish their goal, which is to cause us to scatter so we're not as strong of a community. We don't have each other's backs if we're not right near each other. There's not as many. They got rid of a lot of the ones that aren't local because they found it was too hard to survive in the mud and moved on. So thinning us out and causing us to not become such a strong unit, they accomplished that. If they scatter us to the winds, then they can hit us individually and cause us to either move or go away somehow. And that's their plan every year. It's like I sit here and I predict everybody exactly what's going to happen. Like, and the rains are going to come, and some people are going to move here, and they're going to move there, and then the police are going to come in, and blah blah blah. And everybody goes, oh yeah, okay, right, sure. And then it happens every year, same thing. You know what I mean? And it gets frustrating after a while.
First blood. God damn it! Sorry, my dog is an asshole.
No, go for it. And Sparkplug is obeying his master's voice.
Yeah, he's a good boy, actually. I mean, he's a dog at the root of all of it, so he's going to be dog-like. But
he's got small man syndrome.
But yeah, he does, huge. But he's a good boy. He's a good boy. He's a very good boy. He's the best thing in my world. Dog is the best thing in my world.
He seems to like you.
Yeah, he loves me.
He's licking your neck there.
He gives hugs too. Give me hugs. He is super cute. I want to actually get him his own YouTube channel.
How are Jeremy Leonard and Chris treating the group?
Jeremy's a dick.
the problem with him is?
Jeremy is a condescending prick, is the problem with him. Is he thinks he's doing us all a favor by doing his job. He's got the same mentality as a lot of the county workers, the homeless workers around here, which is, I don't know, when I go to a restaurant or I go to the dentist's office, I don't have to kiss anybody's ass to be treated fairly. You know, I don't have to kiss my waitress's ass for her to bring me food. I don't have to kiss the dentist's ass for him doing my teeth. But the people who work for the city have a tendency to feel like their asses need to be kissed for them to do their jobs properly.
Well, you are a lower kind of species of human being.
And he's doing us such a great favor to get paid to be condescending prick. You know what I mean? And so that bothers me. Enforcing things that are against federal mandate, you know, walking around back here on the levee when the state game, fish and game said they didn't want anybody back there, including city employees. They went and removed my belongings without notice and hauled them away in the trash truck. Like, why are you on federal land to begin with? It doesn't matter if you work for the city or not. You're still not supposed to be on federal land regardless, let alone disposing of my belongings without notice. And so him and I got into it about that. He had single-handedly torpedoed, like, three different organizations that wanted to help the food pantry.
The organizations were?
Gray Bears and then a couple other ones. There's a man who wanted to, Harmony for Humanity wanted to do a concert here. And I sat here and listened to him stand at my table and just talk mad shit about me, about the food pantry, about how I was single-handedly bringing a rat infestation into the... There's been rats here back occupy. Like, whenever people gather, the rats come. That's like, it's what happens. I didn't single-handedly cause the rat infestation.
I don't know. You have a kind of a rat-like look about you.
I know. I'm very rodent-like, aren't I? Me and my little rodent dog. So it's just one of those things of, like, you know, you have the things that people complain about the homeless community, which are true. I mean, there is a, you know, a group of folks that trash things, that leave needles, that are disrespectful, that don't care about their community. And so I deal with those, and then the city workers who think that they're doing us some huge favor, and then the people who supposedly represent us, like the union and all of them, who just basically repeat the city's propaganda. I mean, they came down here during the floods, and the city workers and the union were both going, y'all need to get to higher ground. Y'all need to get to higher ground. And I'm in the middle of a river. I think I'm aware of that, you know, that I need to get to higher ground. Except everybody that moved to higher ground got harassed by the sheriff.
Some of them ticketed.
So you're just like shuffling us into a situation where we're going to get ticketed and moved off anyway. And it was all strategically planned to get people moved into the parking garage, to get them over to Depot, to put us back into a cage, you know. And it's like, I'm sorry, I know that some situations happened that led to me being homeless, but I'm a grown-up. I can, like, determine who comes over to my house and what time I go to bed and when I get up. If you're causing me to spend my entire day going from service to service to service, of course I'm never going to get anything accomplished. You're giving me a curfew.
Because you're homeless and you're a drug addict and crazy. Come on.
Oh, I'm a crazy homeless drug addict. Yeah, okay. That had nothing to do with the things that the county did, you know, or that the city did.
They're trying to help you.
The majority of women out here.
Why don't you get services? You're service resistant.
I'm service resistant. I've had all the services. I've had all the services. I want to be a grown-up, you know? Make it so that I have access to services that are all centrally located. Don't cause me to go all over town to get services so that I spend my entire day. If you're in survival mode, you're just thinking about what you need to have to survive today or to survive tomorrow. You can't think about the long term. And if you have to go on one side of town to get food and the other side of town to get a place to sleep and the other side of town to get your laundry done and over here to do this and up to M line to do that, you don't have any time left over for planning for the long term. You're just trying to get through today.
How are county officials helping or not helping?
I haven't seen any of those. There's county officials that are helping?
They got a lot of millions of dollars to help all
they
you.
They got billions of dollars. But apparently the two porta potties that they have down here for over 200 people cost $10,000 a day. So that's where the money's going. Oh, and here, I'll do it on your show too. I already announced on the radio, I'm going to send it to Governor Newsom. I found out that if you are someone who receives services from a nonprofit, federal, state, or county-funded organization, or a state or federal county organization itself, that you have the right to call for an audit of the funds and how they were spent. And so I'm officially calling for an audit of the monies that was given to Santa Cruz County and the city of Santa Cruz for the homeless. Since I am somebody who is the recipient of those services, I officially call for an audit of what happened to those monies.
And the minute you get it, I expect to get the full accounting and critique from you.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping. So I'm going to send these recordings.
Don't hope too hard.
I'm going to send these recordings to Newsom and hope he pays attention. Because I think that a bunch of money's been absconded myself personally, because I don't think porta potties cost $10,000 a day.
Costs are rising. Besides, homeless people are very messy, as you know.
Yeah, well, you know, I go in there right after they've been cleaned and they're still dirty and have no toilet paper, so I'm not sure where that $10,000 is going. I'd be pretty sure that somebody is closely related to somebody that works on the city council that owns the porta potty.
Shocking claim about our city council. They're meeting today, you know. You can Zoom in and call them up and make your opinion known. Think of that.
Are they really meeting today?
They are.
Still doing closed circuit TV.
They are still doing, we don't hear you except on the Zoom, and that's for 1 minute.
1 minute, huh?
Well, it could be for 2 minutes if you get in during oral communication, if the mayor feels like it.
What is their subject today?
I saw the agenda, but I got to admit to you, I do not know the details of it. It didn't look like it was terribly involved with anything that low-income people would be concerned with.
What I think is great is the thing, like the federal government said that they wouldn't waive, they wouldn't close down homeless encampments due to health and safety issues, but they would waive neighborhood impact reports and building permits and stuff for people to build housing, because we are allowed to be in city property as long as there is a single homeless person in the city. And so then Santa Cruz votes down the homeless, the low-income housing that they're supposed to be building. They vote it down due to the fucking neighborhood impact study. That was waived by the feds. Like, the state, you realize the state is now suing the city of Santa Cruz because of them refusing to build the low-income housing. What the hell? Like,
I wish they sued them a little harder.
Why does Santa Cruz think that it's autonomous? They cut down a redwood tree once to get to me at a camp out on Highway 9. They took a cordless saw and cut down a redwood tree, violating federal mandate, federal law, to enforce an infraction.
And killing a good tree.
A city infraction. They committed a federal crime to enforce a city infraction. Like, they think the autonomousness of the city of Santa Cruz is mind-boggling to me.
They're a mind unto themselves.
And the fact that they're not making the income that they were making before because of the way that COVID affected tourism means that they don't have the clout that they used to have with the state, because they used to bring in a huge amount of taxes to the state of California, and we haven't in the last 2 years because of the lack of tourism. So they don't have the muscle they used to have, so this is the time to hit them.
Have you thought of setting up some rides and tours as a tourist attraction?
So come visit the homeless community of Santa Cruz. I will introduce you personally to every truck dealer.
There you go. Looks like the phone hookups are still available, at least some of them, in the camp, right next to the center stairway down.
And that was reassuring to find that that phone access to being able to power up your phone, the kind of board of different electrical hookups, was still available near the stairway going up. So in spite of the deficiencies in many areas, not to mention the least of which is safety, there are phone hookups restored, and that's good. This next song is called Pirates of Somalia. On November 15, 2008, Somali pirates seized an oil tanker with 2 million barrels of oil on it. Much propaganda has been written maligning the Somali pirates. While the motivations of pirates are rarely entirely benign, there are many things worth mentioning about this period of piracy on the high seas off the coast of Africa. The Asian tsunami of 2004 had revealed the fact that Western corporations have been dumping nuclear waste in the ocean off the coast of Somalia, taking advantage of the lack of any kind of coast guard patrolling the waters off the coast of this very large failed state. The only thing that stopped this nuclear waste dumping was the rise of piracy in the region.
Let me tell you the story of 100 ships traversing the great big sea, moving the riches of the world in large ships owned by the captains of industry. They were heading to places like Amsterdam, London, and L.A. But they had to change their plans a bit when they were held up on the way. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, sailing the ocean blue. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, I'll raise a jolly roger to you. Harald Harry is a town of fishermen, living lives of hardship and toil. But today they had a really good catch, 2 million barrels of oil. They travel with the pirate's handbook, doing what's just and fair. Taxing the robber barons and taking their rightful share. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, sailing the ocean blue. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, I'll raise a jolly Roger to you. Well, there are those who don't like pirates, but I think they're just great. I only wish that I could shake their hands and say, good job, mate. I only wish that I could join them on the seas, keep those tankers at bay. Tax the corporations and give the loot away. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, sailing the ocean blue. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, I'll raise a jolly Roger to you. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, sailing the ocean blue. Here's to the pirates of Somalia, I'll raise a jolly Roger to you.
Meanwhile, back at the last day, I think it was the last day of the Food Not Bombs presence at the privately leased parking lot, or maybe it was privately owned and leased to the city before, next to the university copy business, if you're familiar with the Front and Cathcart area. I stopped in to check out how Food Not Bombs was doing because, of course, it was moving to the town clock, and we're going to hear more about that on Sunday when you hear the longer version of the show, assuming that I get to doing it. Let's hope we do, or hope I do. But in any case, on this last day, I ran into some folks at the meal, and here's one of the workers talking to me at some length about a meeting that they held, I guess, the previous day or day before, a couple days before, and it gives you some idea of the internal processes that go on in the Food Not Bombs world.
Well, I'm at the Food Not Bombs lot. It's about 12:15 to 3, and I am talking with
Samuel Battle, volunteer at Food Not Bombs.
Hey, Samuel. And so let me actually roll down the window here. So you had a meeting of Food Not Bombs at the Red Church yesterday?
Yeah. They were wanting to move Food Not. I called Keith on some bullcrap. I told him, need to stop running like a one-man show. We got people working here every single day that work their asses off, to slave their butts, try to eat here. Food Not Bombs is not just the workers that come here. It's the people that come here every day that needed to survive. So I told him, you need to look at some of the ramifications that you do, like that protest that you did. Made the cops angry, and all the cops retaliated against the homeless later on.
What protest are you talking about?
When they were closing Food Not Bombs at the other parking lot, Keith had a big protest. Cops never showed up, but at the end of the day, they messed with all the homeless. So I told him, some of the choices you make just makes the city mad at the homeless. You need to think about some of the things you do and how it affects the homeless after you leave the lot. And I started telling him, you want to move the bed?
What was his reaction to that?
Well, he kind of listened. He was like, all right. He was open-minded. And I told him, when it comes to moving it to Deba Park, you can't move there. It's gang neighborhood. It's bad neighborhood. It's not safe. It's you don't want to move there. A lot of people won't want to eat there knowing that it's so close to gang neighborhood. So we decided that we're going to move it to the clock tower. It's not going to be a permanent stay. We're going to be looking for another spot, just in case this doesn't pan out. And we're making a new rule for the tents, too. When you give out tents at Food Not Bombs, you no longer want people camping out there at Food Not Bombs. And we made adjustments to the rule about giving out tents at Food Not Bombs because I asked them, if you kept giving out tents at funeral bombs. People camp at funeral bombs because of the issues. Because the cops are not allowed to like us. Get the camping, the drugs, the drama, the blah, 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 blah. So if people start camping after we give them tents there, how about we revise the idea of giving tents out at funeral bombs and give them somewhere else? So the plan is, when we move the cop tower, we're going to try to give out tents there, but the second people start camping out there, we're going to revise the plan and start trying to figure out where to give out the tents somewhere else so people don't camp at funeral bombs.
How many people were at the meeting, Samuel?
About like 7 or 8. Me, Keith, Kalia, Tyler, Eagle.
Laura?
Laura was not there. Laura has been like undermined, and some decisions that have been made for funeral bombs, she's been left completely out of the loop, and she feels like she should be a part of some of the decisions being made in funeral bombs. So it's part of the thing that we had discussed in the meeting. We wanted more consensus on where we will be forced to go instead of Keith just telling us it'll be alright. We want more freedom, because a while ago we was wanting to go to the bench lands. And people like me would rather die than go to the bench lines because there's too much crime and there's too much drugs. So we were telling them, when you come over to a place that you think might be a good spot to move, what you should do is let us know, put it on the table so we can tell you if it's bad or not. Give us more consensus on where we can go.
Did he agree to do that?
Yeah. When he wanted to move to Debo Park, I told him why it was a bad idea because of gangs, alcohol, drugs, and all that, and he listened. So he agreed to move it to the clock tower instead. So he is being more open-minded. I just think he needed more people to speak their opinions and why they thought they weren't being heard.
Did anyone else say stuff that you think was important?
Well, a lot of them were also on the same topic of wanting to have more consensus and more say in what happened to Food Not Bombs. Because the whole thing with us having to move to Wells Fargo or us moving here and moving, we're just told one day to take out the stuff out of storage and move it here and then move it here. We're like, no, you can't work us like dogs. We want to know what's going on.
Will you be meeting regularly at the Red Church on Monday?
As I know, yes.
And what time are those meetings? Are they open to the community?
They were open at 5. I suggest they're open for anybody that considers themselves a part of putting up bombs. Whether you're someone that eats here or whether you're someone that volunteers here.
How about someone who runs around with a tape recorder here?
Yeah. Anybody's interested in trying to help things get better, yes.
So, what's happened in the last week, Samuel, you senior? It looked like you've been through the mill. I think I was there the day you got hit.
Lead pipe?
I didn't see it happen, but I saw you came up and you were holding your eyes, so
yeah,
that's what happened.
I got hit with a lead pipe recently, then I got maced a couple days ago, and somebody else had a seizure a couple days ago here.
And how was that dealt with?
Well, when he had a seizure, he was biting so hard on his tongue, he was starting to make his tongue bleed. So I had to open his mouth and put something in it so he didn't bite his tongue off. And I rolled him onto his side, and we called 911.
And how about your lead pipe injury?
Well, dude called me the N-word, hit me with a lead pipe, and then me and my brother curb stomped him.
Is that the guy who was running around acting crazy when I was here the next day, whenever?
Yep.
And,
yep.
And then what's his... What's your analysis of his behavior, if any?
Drugs.
Drugs?
Mm.
And has he been, should we say, has he showed up again for more meals?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of.
Probably not be the kindest reception, I imagine.
I bet, right? I bet. But right now, the best thing I have to report is Keith is being more open and letting us have more say in where we're going.
How's the volunteer situation? Are you having enough volunteers?
We always need more volunteers because there's always a shortage. And a lot of times when we've lost some volunteers, we've lost Kat, we've lost Laura. So and some of our volunteers have been having problems, like Steve. A couple days ago, Steve was acting like he was off his meds, and he tried to pick a fight with me. And I never raised a fist at him, and then he called the cops on me later because he got scared. So everybody here, even the workers, have their own things that they're going through. They all have hard lives. So it's always best to add a new face to the picture to help out when we all got things going through our heads.
No police problems so far this week.
Except for Steve calling the cops, but the cops didn't do nothing.
Tomorrow is, of course, the day when the property owners at Keith McHenry committed himself to moving. Is that the plan?
Yes, that is the plan. We plan on moving to the clock tower.
And you're going to be having the containers, the storage containers will be somewhere else.
They'll be moved somewhere else, my understanding, because we can't keep them here. We were also talking about the containers in the meeting, too, because we were thinking, like, we don't really need two containers, and that also might be part of the reason why we have the heat with the cops, because of the containers, and people camping behind the containers.
Presumably the containers will be in a more distant location.
That's what I'm hoping for, but Keith is hoping for, in the long run, to have the containers at the Food Not Bomb site to make things easier. So people don't have to go container to Food Not Bombs, to container to Food Not Bombs, to kitchen to here. He's trying to make it as easy as possible. Keith is really trying to help out the best he can. But just like...
There's some difference of opinion on some of this stuff.
Exactly. There's a difference on opinion because he's not on the streets. People like me are on the streets. So even though he may be trying to help us out, he doesn't always look at the ramifications of all the things he does. Like when he was giving out tents at Food Not Bombs at the other parking lot. Yeah, people needed tents, but people did not need the tent right there.
So, I don't know, is that going to be considered a problem? Are volunteers going to be asked to police the area? Is that what's going to happen? Or?
Well, volunteers, when we give out tents at the clock tower, we're going to tell the people that we give out tents, like, dude, you can have this tent, but we don't want people camping here. When people start camping here, we're going to revise the idea of giving tents here and start giving them out at a different location. We don't want people to freeze in the cold, but we don't want them camping at Food Not Bombs and making a bad eyesore for Food Not Bombs.
Have you heard much about the Depot Park situation as far as where people went?
You mean the camping at Depot Park?
Yeah.
I don't know much about where the people went. I don't really know much of anything. I've heard some people started camping in Arena Gulch. I don't know how much truth is in that, but I heard they did.
I don't know.
But when it comes over there, I'm not too sure. Maybe people went into the... more into the near the lagoon or near the beach. I know a lot of people are camping at the boardwalk. A lot of people are camping near Cal's Beach and this is that. And a ton of people are camping right here on the levee. So when spots get run out, people just migrate to the next spot.
How's the restroom situation now that you've moved?
The restroom situation, how we move? Well, a lot of us already have a couple bathrooms that we know we're at. Like, if we need to go, we have ones already planned out where to go. Like, me, when I need to go back, I know there's a bathroom near the HP Arena. So if I have to go, I will go there.
The old bathroom that was the one next to the Food Not Bomb site, or?
The one across the street.
The one that was...
Near the Wheelworks.
There's one near the Wheelworks now.
Yes. And then if worse and worse, I'll use the bathroom at the skate park. But
you got to be pretty good control over your facilities there, Samuel.
No, I run to the bathroom like any other man, to be honest.
Right. Well, we've descended to bathroom talk. Anything you want to add that you think we should talk about?
I don't know. I think that sums it up. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
And earlier today at the Huff meeting, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, which happens every Thursday, if you're interested, at the Sub Rosa Cafe, it's 703 Pacific, 11 to 1. We got a hold of Keith McHenry by phone to give his impression of some of the things that Samuel talked about, as well as a general update on the new location of Food Not Bombs at the town clock.
The free store is the second Sunday.
It's not anymore. They're withholding it.
You mean here?
It's Keith. What's up out there in the real world?
That's where you are. We are in the Huff world.
Okay, I'm in the real world.
So are you prepared to make tell us what's going on? You've moved your criminal feeding operation to the town clock. I was there yesterday. I even saw you lurking around. And it happens that I think you were, Garrett Stevens, who was kind of running point man for the mob, or the food mob, was saying that you feed, theoretically it's open 12 to 5, but the hot food usually arrives at 1. Is that accurate?
No, so that's an inaccurate information. So we, the hot food does arrive at 1. We set up at 12, and we break down at 4.
Oh, at 4, okay.
Yeah, so because we were burning out early on in the pandemic when we were doing it so much longer. So we moved it, you know. So we adjust, you know, so it's been actually for a year, over a year, maybe a year and a half now that it's been noon to four.
Okay, yeah, that's I think what I've been, what I thought somewhat before, but, you know, you get different stories. And often when I come at four, there's still sort of the remnants of food there in the past, so, you know.
Yeah, we, I mean, we will eke out food until we're done packing up, but we try to, we do what we call the soft breakdown, according to Joe, what he calls it, of the clothing area at 4. On occasion, by accident, Ryan gets all excited and starts to break down at 3:30, but I prefer that we not do that. But,
I got you.
You know, Ryan just likes to do that sometimes. So,
there was a, as I understand, talking to Samuel, there was a difference of opinion at the Huff meeting. Maybe I've talked to you about this already, about where to go. You wanted to go to Depot Park initially, but you were overruled by the mob of people who insisted.
No, that actually is completely inaccurate. It had nothing to do. It's in no way related to any reality.
Okay, well, tell me the real story, man.
Well, one of our volunteers at two meetings ago suggested we check out Depot Park as a possible location. So we checked out Depot Park as a possible location. And one of the attributes of that could have potentially have been that we would move the shipping container behind the Homeless Garden Project office, but they are getting, you know, they're leasing that space from the city, so that was not workable. And it's not, and it was never a great location. It was not our first choice. It was just a potential choice that I think it was Emma brought up, but it might have been somebody else. But one of the dedicated people, I forget who was at that meeting, might have been Clea. So anyway, we rejected that, and we agreed that we would move to the town clock.
Uh-huh.
So that's what our, so that was the situation.
Fair enough. You have a problem with trying to stop burnout by using these large storage containers to limit the amount of time and energy used with every meal to get the food there. But that, so far, is you're now being required to actually move it food a considerable distance. Well, not only from the kitchen, Calvary Episcopal, but also from wherever the location of the stored food is, right?
Well, okay, so that's not exactly accurate either, but to clarify that, we got one stored, we have three shipping containers. One is refrigerated in Happy Valley for all of our produce and stuff that we need cold. That we've had for like 3 years, even before the pandemic, maybe 4 years. That we still have, and we still keep the produce in there. Then the second one we bought specifically to do sort of what you're talking about, which was to avoid burnout by having our equipment and a place to put all the, you know, the surplus clothing from clothing distribution and all the things that were happening, particularly back when the fire happened, and we were filling up the, you know, the parish hall with stuff and pissing off the AA meeting that needed to be in there. So we got the ship container and we put it initially at where Taco Bell was, and it totally revolutionized everything because we could just have people, even without a vehicle, show up, unlock it, and set up the canopies and tables and stuff. Then we got evicted from there, went to Lot 27, and container there. So then we decided that we need to get a third shipping container because of the impending economic collapse, and so that we can stockpile food and event so that we could keep up with it. And as the collapse was occurring, we could then keep organizing to get more dry goods and things like that from wherever we could and have a place to store it. So right now we have three shipping containers. One is waiting to have the equipment and backup and everything that we need for, and we're putting together. And we have been doing this even before COVID because of, obviously, the economy was headed towards a ditch. And, you know, there was always the possibility of things like earthquakes and other things like that to respond to. So that shipping container, which also, which was, so one of the, that shipping container we moved to a church in SoCal with all the backup food, all the rice that we're storing at Joe's and stuff like that. And then we got the other shipping container that we were using on site. We had to send to the Homeless Garden Project's field at the compost area, which we did that. And then we had to rent a, and we're getting it, buying ultimately, a small trailer that will fit in the parking space at the town clock, and that's where the equipment that we normally were putting in the shipping container is now being stored. Huh. So that we can bring it to there every day. And it's still it's slightly better than what we had going when we had no trailer, but there's complications. In fact, it's just right this second I'm rushing to town to pick up Dreadeye so he can help lift the fucking thing on my car, and I can drive it over there by 12 noon, and it's a big pain in the butt that this is happening. But hopefully over time, we will be able to have this more ironed out so that all the equipment will just arrive, and then the van will be free to come with the coffee and everything as it was doing when we had the shipping container at lot 27. So anyway, that's where we're at now.
And on the upside, no police officers appeared yesterday when I was there.
Yeah, no, I mean, Sergeant Jones pretended like he didn't see us there and stuff like that. So anyway, so yeah, it seems to be good.
Right.
I think at a certain point, you know, now we're getting on this real cusp, this real edge of the total collapse. And, you know, so now we're in a kind of a good situation. You know, we're getting prepared. This fucking happened. And so we... you know, we'll be able to handle, you know, we're already handling the increased number of unhoused people that are just generally becoming unhoused because of the economic chaos of the pandemic and stuff. But now we'll, you know, with the next three or four major crises that are on the horizon economically, we should be basically ready to handle the situation. So...
But what about the fallout shelter in the event of nuclear attack?
That, we're just going to take all of our wieners and put them out there to get roasted.
Right.
That's what we can do about that.
Well, you're going to be turning a catastrophe into a weenie roast.
Yeah. Well, you know, the one thing I'd like everyone to know is that the U.S. will win the nuclear war. What that means is... anybody's guess, but we definitely will win the nuclear war.
Damn right, man.
So vote for us.
We're tough. Come on. I don't want to hear any of these weenie type jokes about our strength. As long as we can support those valiant Kievians and so forth, we'll stand firm. What about the food not bombs? I've been kind of waiting for an update around the state or anything you may have heard about. I know you've been busy with this ridiculous Santa Cruz situation, but you also may have heard a few things from statewide and nationwide and worldwide and so forth.
I know food not bombs in D.C. got kicked out of Franklin Park because they privatized the park in front of the Washington Post office. I don't know where they've gone to now. They kicked out all those homeless people. They've been doing massive sweeps there. We've been getting trounced with the sweeps in Kalamazoo. I did have a nice conversation with the Lawrence, Kansas food outbombs, and they told me about, they were doing really well, and they had just, the person I spoke to had just gone to the Kansas City group, and they were doing largely what we're doing, although not every day, but they've got a whole clothing distribution and everything like that. That's pretty impressive. So that's cool. And I've been working with the Chicago group on securing stuff. The San Francisco group seems to be doing really well. So that's that. And all is well with that. Here, 1 second. I've got a rush here. Okay, Greta, we got to move fast. Let's go. We got to go.
So what about the peace, stopping the warmongering behaviors of the, you know, through multiple organizations standing up and saying, hell no, we won't send missiles or something to that effect, even though you have no control over the missiles?
Yeah, we would like to organize something surrounding that, but, hey, Jedi, we gotta go.
Are the Food Not Bombs literature tables still up, or is that, I haven't seen them for a while.
We stopped doing them during COVID, although I'm going to reintroduce them potentially tomorrow, not today.
Gotcha.
But because today I'm in the middle of writing a book while setting up the meal and everything, so I got to get the fuck back to my book writing, which I just interrupted at a crucial moment, which is really annoying the crap out of me. Because I keep having to, the part that I'm doing now takes a lot of concentration, and it has to go from the beginning to the end, and this is the fourth day in a row I've been interrupted before I got to the end, and now I've got to start over again this afternoon as soon as I'm done with this. It's because,
The name of this volume?
Huh?
What are you calling this book?
Right now I'm calling it Always Free. Before that I called it The Food Terrorist Diaries, but I got pushed back on that. Let me get the other line. 1 second.
All right. So we're talking.
And unfortunately, we've run out of time here, and that about was pretty much what Keith had to say at the Huff meeting via phone to us. If you're interested in learning more about what you can do to help out our numerous projects that Huff is working on or would like to work on regarding civil rights to restore them here in Santa Cruz for homeless folks, get in touch with me at 831-423-4833 or 423-HUFF, Huff. Come to a meeting or just get in touch and I will pile tasks upon you or see what might titillate you or take your fancy. Thanks for listening. Perhaps back at you at Sunday at 9:30 when customarily we do a show.
The last bottle Noha has for her.
I want to tell people outside to do something. Why is this Palestinian blood so cheap to you? Why are our neighbors living in peace but we are deprived of that? What have the children done to deserve this? Why should my daughter drink milk from dirty bottles? She won't even take it anymore. What did we do wrong? They bring us some milk, a blanket. We don't want it. We want to go home and eat and sleep and live like everyone else. Where is the great Arab world that they taught us about at school? They have left us. Shame on them. Conditions here are deteriorating. Creating a clean, safe shelter in a war zone is no easy task. The school simply isn't equipped to deal with the number of refugees that are now staying here night after night. This is the only place that they can get clean water. You can see that most of the taps aren't even working, and people are using the water here to wash themselves, to wash their hands, their feet, and now they're using it to drink with. It's the only water that's clean in the whole school. We could feel the anger all around the shelter. disappointment at the inaction of the international community, and rage at the Arab leaders who they feel have sold them out.
Where are the authorities? Where are our...